Reading from text 77. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sukha Dukhe Cha Vavari Chakte Kale Pratikshamane Shanardam Api Vyartam Naneyam. Translation: patiently enduring till the time when one can put aside material happiness, distress, desire, and false gain, one should not waste even a fraction of a second. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksur Malatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Govardhan, and also prayers from Govardhan that you're all safe and well. I think a great proportion of the Sangha listeners are on the East Coast. It's pretty hairy out there. Actually, I just called my mother, who's without electricity. My brother is picking her up and taking her someplace else, so I just got a sense of what's going on there. This is a very, very, I think, significant verse. So I'm going to read the purport and kind of go over it. But let me put the verses in context. You know, ultimately, any spiritual path is endeavoring for perfection. And on the path of bhakti, perfection is a heart filled with devotion. There's no other desire within the heart but love. That's min parma prema rup. The nature of the top love is the most inclusive and natural love, which is to love reality, the beautiful, to love the divine. So that's what's being aimed for, and the Narada Bhakti Sutras is systematically presenting that. One second. And we're up to a section in the Narada Bhakti Sutras where Narada is giving us some final instructions, key instructions. And the way I look at these instructions are, there's just such core material psychology and core material inebrities, but let's say psychology, that so easily turns off from the truth, which is that we're a part of something greater than ourselves, that we're made for service of that which is greater than ourselves. That's who we are, particles of consciousness, the symptom, the fruition of that consciousness, the perfection of that consciousness is love. What else can be the culmination of consciousness? And to get that and to live eternally in that is really what life's about. That doesn't entail renouncing our desires born with this body, coming from our karma. But it means using everything for that endeavor. Even the satisfaction of our desires. Can be appropriately used for that endeavor. Either to serve and offer our best through the things that we like, or to make us peaceful so that we can meditate more deeply on the goal of life. But that's the objective. And therefore, there was just a section, it's interesting to avoid argumentative debate. And for two reasons. One reason is, of course, it doesn't mean there's not when there's appropriate cause, but it means that we're so egocentric, which is antithetical to the soul, that we're so drawn to establishing ourselves above others. And one of the prime ways that is done is by defeating people. And therefore, our eager participation in activities of controversy or hearing how others are down or arguing to put others down or joining causes to put others down. Vaishnav is such a different thing. Vaishnav does not have material ego. Because his objective is not to control and enjoy the world. His objective is to serve the world and serve the will of the divine as it moves the world and as it flows through the world. So one has to be careful in bhakti and what one gets involved. More and more as you read about devotion and bhakti, it's a very serious endeavor. It's a very, very serious endeavor. And people who are enlightened or follow those who are or are awakening the soul, they begin to see through that perspective of what is actually going on. That we've been given a chance to realize the self, to catch the truth, to end our suffering. And it's a very, very rare opportunity because the human form of life which is temporary, but has this extreme value of pensiveness, deliberation. Maybe we can say free will. It can rise above instinct, not just to act how it feels, but to act according to what is good for one. In that ultimate scheme of things, which the facility of human life gives one the kind of mind, intelligence, and ego to be able to do that. So enlightened souls are urgent, and enlightened souls urge others to become urgent. Again, urgency does not mean renunciation of the world. Urgency means a glorification and dedication to that divine absolute reality with whoever you are and by whatever you have. And at a particular level, after hearing again and again and again and again and again, one will understand against the flow of materialism that one sees in the world and that has entered one's consciousness, that one should surrender to God. Surrender to a principle higher than oneself. Surrender to truth and not instinct. Judgment and not whim. Altruism and not selfishness. Others above oneself. God above everything. It's just a simple point that you can understand through community. If you've ever experienced community, we had a Bhakti Immersion retreat. I thought we experienced community. I saw there was a Raghunath took a group of 25 people on a tour. They bonded. And what happens is you realize a goal beyond your individual self. And that's a totality of something. Serving everything that serves yourself better than yourself can. It's really wonderful to be in a community with a beautiful ideal that you can embrace, which becomes important in your own individual desires and satisfies your own individual desires better than you can yourself. When you step out of that egocentric consciousness that blocks the flow of love and divine love in your heart, so one may get a glimpse of that, an experience of that, an understanding of that, proceed on the path, and still get waylaid by so many obstacles and so many ways in which the ego arises, with the tendency to appropriate everything, even good qualities, to enhance one's prestige, power, control, reputation. It's so insidious the way that ego works. It's one of the symptoms of anishtita bhakti, of a bhakti which becomes not steady. And that's with the advancement of bhakti itself, comes followers and comes praise. And as soon as one appropriates that for one's ego, that is happening because I am great, and I want to be great. And I like the position of the center, and I like the position of authority, and I like the position of control. Then in a second, one's spiritual life is finished. I remember in maybe 20, 25 years ago, one person became a guru, or he was a guru in ISKCON. And he got followers and he got power. And then somehow or other, he started to purchase palaces for preaching. And in those palaces, there were seats for him, like 6 foot high practically. Some of the godbrothers in his area became concerned. And they went to a saint and a scholar in Vrindavan, seeking guidance. And they asked him, if he's attached to sitting on the seat, will he fall down? And the answer was so nice. He said, no, he's already fallen. Because that's what fallen is. Fallen is developing the consciousness that I am the center and I'm meant to enjoy and control, rather than God is in the center. And I am meant to surrender and serve. So many things. And then argumentative logic, it's not the way you'll ascend to the truth anyway. There has to be mercy. Our intelligence can only carry us so far, because ultimately the absolute reality is independent. It's not controlled. It's not controlled by our mind. It has a will. And to come in contact with that will, the intelligence is so limited. And therefore, intelligence, which can be used in devotional service, can also be appropriated by the ego to make one uncooperative and independent. And therefore, another nice instruction from Narada, which we just had, was respect Bhakti Shastrani, respect the teachings that come in tradition that have been realized by great souls, that have been compiled in the Shastra, in the sacred text, as a higher pramana, a higher method of evidence and understanding to reach the absolute reality than your mundane logic. Respect and follow that tradition, time tested, revealed and applied with the help of learned souls. That tradition that will prescribe the appropriate practices and activities and help guide you in your decisions so that you can lead a life, a practical life, that can help you work through your desires, to engage your desires, to dedicate your desires, and to gradually renounce those desires that are anatta, that have no value to the core essence of your soul, which is to be a receptacle of divine love. So now, in text 77, there's another essential instruction which deals with the psychology of the mind. And the psychology of the mind tells us it's not necessary to surrender now. It's not necessary to practice now. I will do that in the future. Why? I have too many problems now. I have too many distresses now. I have too many desires. So here it's saying, no. That will come in time with devotional service, but don't wait to practice devotional service until that time. Like the bumblebee goes into the lotus to take the honey. And then as the night comes, the lotus closes and the bee will be trapped, so the bee has a decision to take. Can I get out of this trap now, or drink the honey and drink more honey and wait till the morning? So it says, no, I'll wait. I'll wait to get out. But then the elephant comes to the garden and chews the lotuses, and the bee is also swallowed and crushed. Trust no future, however pleasant. We cannot wait. There's actually an urgency. Nice to see here in Vrindavan. Sometimes it does take a age to get those realizations, but it's nice whenever they happen. I met one friend and a good sadhu has lived a life of service. And I could see that he's really taken shelter of the holy name along with his service. I asked him how much he chants. He said, please don't feel offended, Marge. I'd rather not share that. Then I understood that he's legitimate. He doesn't want his ego to appropriate his namvrata for his ego to ruin the bhakti that namvrata will give, that vow will give. But, oh, now I'm chanting so many now, I'm a great dhanaka. But he told me something I really appreciated. He said, I don't have the highest taste, but with conviction, he said, but I have faith it is accessible. I have trust it is accessible. And I felt with him that urgency. Don't wait. I'm here at ISKCON Govardhan, and I'm concentrating a little bit more on my spiritual practices. My Sangha, Bori John Prabhu is out here next to me. My Shesha Prabhu, Keshava Bharti, others may come. And there is at least 4 or 5 hours of reading in my schedule. I go to about an hour and a half of that. And enjoy the Sangha. But what impresses me is when people are advanced and how they look at time and how they utilize that time and how they control the tongue so that the whims and desires of the heart are not reinforced by the expression of them. One person, he gave the example of, I can see the person is very serious. I don't think the person wastes 1 minute. And has an incredible taste to hearing. Can hear for hours and hours and hours, which sometimes is hard. I know when there's just reading without discussion, they have discussion, but when it's just reading, my mind is grasping onto so many points and analyzing so many points. I'm just thinking, why are they just reading and reading and reading sometimes? But then I understood. In an advanced state, it's love, it's rasa. You're relishing your relationship with Krishna. You're hearing about Krishna. It's not about an intellectual endeavor. Although the shastra also is to serve the intelligence and fix up the intelligence and fix up the understanding and develop the faith, they're all connected. But it's also an inspiration for love by a description of the philosophy and teachings of your beloved. One person gave the example of Bhakti Vidya Purnamarcha. He travels around the world with no luggage. The clothes on his back, a few charters, a small bag under his arm, and maybe a small pen drive where he has some information he needs. He asked him, how did you do that? How did you become so simple? He said, it took 20 years. I just kept on analyzing. What do I really need? How do I really live? So, can't wait. That was the instruction of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada's guru. When Prabhupada first met him, when Prabhupada was just in his early 20s. And Prabhupada asked him the question, why should we dedicate ourselves to a spiritual revolution? And when we are still subjugated by the British, Prabhupada was a Gandhian. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, the urgency of spiritual life is so pressing, you can't wait for a political change. You can't wait for an ecclesiastical change, or political change, excuse me. So, we'll read this purport. I think it's really powerful. Satsrup Das Goswami. Human birth is rare and one's lifespan brief. So do we realize that? We understand that, but do we realize that? Do we act on that? Right? When the story of the pool of death, when Maharaj Yudhisthira is challenged with 100 questions or he dies, the last question is, what is the most wonderful thing? And he said, what's the most wonderful, the most amazing thing? That my father's died, my father's father's died, everyone's died. But I act like I won't. Think about it. If you realized you were going to die, how would you act? If you realized, not just theoretically, but you were actually conscious of the reality, how would that change? If you realize the rarity of human form of life, how many species of life the souls traverse, how would you act? Why is human life so precious? Because we can use it to self-realization and get free from birth and death. We can actually realize the self. And there's nothing more important than self-realization. Because if you don't understand who you are, how can you understand what to do? If you don't understand what you are, how can you align your life with the self and create a harmony between your being and your living? But it's implied in this shastra, much of human lifetime is in consumed the struggle for existence. It's really shocking to hear what's going on in the East Coast. because my conception always growing up in New York, I mean, you know, there was Kansas and tornadoes, and there was Florida and hurricanes, and there was Oklahoma and droughts, and there was Europe and wars, and you know, I never would expect that New York would be hit by such a unique hurricane where, you know, people are practically without lights, without gas. It really makes you think if we should try to make more endeavor not to become dependent on these things. And how there's Maya Sukaya, illusory happiness. With advancement comes with advancement, material advancement comes a concomitant problem. It's kind of like when you borrow money, you have a certain happiness, but it comes with a debt. So material life is like that. Everything we have, everything we use, whether we pay for it in cash or whether we take it on a credit card, has a payback. That's the law of karma. Everything has a payback. No one is free. Such a struggle, yeah. Anyway, there's a lot to think about. But here it says, much of our human lifetime is committed in the struggle for existence. The psychology is, let me settle myself, and then I can take the spiritual life. Tamal Krishnamurti once told me a thing. He said, you know, the human consciousness is that things will always get better. We're always looking in the future, all these problems will be solved. The future, I'll get it together. The future, I'll have my economic situation. The future, I'll have my relationship. The future, I'll have my health. So he said, that's the consciousness. But actually, things get worse. Because that's the way material nature works. The only thing that can get better is our consciousness. And the only thing that can make us happy is our consciousness. While instructing his young schoolmates on the urgency of Krishna consciousness, Prahlad Maharaj made a calculation of how human life is wasted. This is a quote from the Bhagavatam of three verses. Every human being has a maximum life of 100 years, but for one who cannot control his senses, half of those years are completely lost because at night he sleeps 12 hours being covered by ignorance. Therefore, such a person has a lifetime of only 50 years. The tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are lost. Similarly, in old age, when one is invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. One whose mind and senses are uncontrolled becomes increasingly attached the family because of insatiable desires and very strong illusion, such a life, the remaining years are also wasted because even during those years, he cannot engage himself in devotional service. Bhagavatam 7:6-8. Whenever we misspend time, it is an irrefutable loss. As Chanakya Pandit says, all the gold in a rich man's possession cannot buy back a single moment of time. A devotee uses his time well, and this is one of the symptoms of his advancement. Well, one of the symptoms of advancement, of actually having higher levels of devotion, is avyakta kalatvam. Every moment of devotional service. Yesterday, about 10 o'clock, I walked to Govindakund, which is about a 40-minute walk, and I went to one little secluded ashram called the Madan Mohan Mandir, where some of the greatest mystic bhaktas had spent years, famous ones. An intense spiritual practice. So I came, it's very secluded. There's only usually about three or four babas there. So when I came, there's a temple, and then in the kind of temple room, there's nothing else. There's rooms off to the side. And there was an old Mahant that lived there for about 60 years. Can't imagine what his, he's very, very gentle, and I can't imagine what his consciousness was like. Because he just stayed there, you know, living very, such a humble person. I've never seen so gentle. And outside his door, I saw a little plastic chair covered with a sheet, his picture. I understood, oh my God, you know, he was in his 80s, he passed away. And then I was speaking to the next Mahant, who's his disciple, and he said, yeah, on Gaur Purnima, he was chanting, and then he keeled over, and that was it. So when I was there, the Mahant, he had one English book. So he showed me this English book. And it was about a saint in their tradition, which I kind of heard about. He's famous in Braj. And, you know, and I was summing through it and seeing the life, and 24 hours engaged in devotional service. And some situations are more difficult than others, but spiritual life is internal. This one younger man, I think he's about 30, and I knew him from Vrindavan, and then he got married, and then he has huge responsibility, and he's kind of like a very saintly person. And, you know, he was married before he came, and you know, when he first came to Krishna consciousness with his wife, and they lived in Vrindavan. You know, you could see that easily he could have become a sadhu. But he was married, and he was with his wife, and she was a little bit, I don't know, didn't look like she was so used to austerities. Probably came from a good family in the city someplace, from Europe. So he came to see me, and we were talking. And I asked him, you know, you have so many responsibilities and so many things with family and so many. So what's your understanding of family life? And I liked his answer. He said, when you're in family life, you have to understand that Krishna consciousness is an internal thing. when you're in the world, you may not have the external situation of bhakti surrounding you, but you have your consciousness in mind within your difficulties. And that's what it's saying here. Don't wait. Within whatever you're doing, within your distress, within your happiness, it's incumbent upon an intelligent person to dedicate himself and try to understand God. We cannot wait until after we complete our many duties before starting to remember Krishna. If we give bhakti such a low priority, our practice will never be more than a formality, a hurried prayer stolen from our time for, quote, real business, or a perfunctory visit to the temple once a week. Rather, as Narada has observed, one achieves bhakti by hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord's special qualities, even while engaged in the ordinary activities of life in the world. Thank you, Sangha members, for... I've started it for all my students and others and friends, but not everybody takes to it. They have more important things. Let us remember Lord Krishna's advice in Bhagavad Gita 8:7, remember me and fight. The voice of delusion says, when I'm older, I'll be less occupied with the struggle for existence, then I'll take to Krishna consciousness. This verse is dealing with the voice of delusion. But we may die before old age ever comes, or we may be too feeble at that time. As King Kulashekar prays, this is a famous verse, in the Mukunda Mala Stotra, Krishna Tvadiya Parapankaja Pancharantam Adyeva Me Vishatu Manasaraja Hamsa Pranapriyana Shamaye Kapavatta Pittai Kantavado Kantavaro Dhanavido Smaranam Kutaste. O Lord, at this moment, let the royal swan of my mind enter the network of the stems of the lotus feet of lotus flower of your feet. How will it be possible to remember you at the time of death when my throat will be choked up with mucus, bile, and air? I heard this verse chanted by Srila Prabhupada in such a poignant way. He had gone to the West for the last time in a very, very indisposed position, to say the least. And he had to come back very quickly. He came to Bombay in the train to Mathura, and then a car picked him up with some disciples, and he came to the side gate of the temple, and I was there. Just a few people. And in such a feeling way, he folded his hands and quoted this verse before he entered his house. Never to leave that house again, I think. Krishna Tvadiya Parapankaja Panchi. He quoted it. Let me die now when the swan of my mind is entangled with the lotus of your feet. Otherwise, how will I remember you? If you wait for old age, it's a risky. You see, but if you practice and you have the impressions in your mind, then when you get old and you don't have the strength, your bhajan and your practices won't be dependent on your physical strength. It will flow through you. I have a friend here, a very good friend, who does a lot of preaching and a lot of bhajan for 25 years, over one lack of names and meditation. And I spend time with him. I understand how serious he studies. He is in excruciating pain most of his life now. But it doesn't stop his bhajan, because he brought it to a level of attraction where it flows spontaneously from the mind. But at the end of life, when you get old, to try to practice to develop that becomes difficult. Narada advises that one should patiently endure this vices for the devotee. He should fully engage himself in Krishna consciousness with the goal of going back to Godhead. In the meantime, he should tolerate the dualities of life, as Lord Krishna advises Arjuna. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, Othiya and Abharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Gita 2:14. I heard Prabhupada chant this verse and give a Bhagavad Gita class when I was in Texas. Matra Sparshas Kuntiya Sitoshna Sukha Dukada. Tolerate. Without tolerating, you can't transcend the body. Without transcending the body, it's very hard to focus the mind on Krishna. Tapodivyam yena kaputva sattvam shudye yasman brahmasokyam. Austerities are divine. Because when you tolerate the irrational impulses of the mind and senses and body and continue in your service, the mind extracts itself from the body. But if you constantly adjust the environment at the slightest, you know, go to any length, it's just constantly, you become so attached. You put yourself in a fearful condition. You put yourself in a very fearful condition. Because when you constantly adjust beyond just your needs, and you get in that consciousness, you're reinforcing the bodily conception of life. And therefore you feel the pains and pleasures of the body more intensely. But as a great saint said, pinch of suffering is felt more than a ton of happiness. Patiently endure does not mean that one should stoically put up with life's dualities and not fully engage in Krishna consciousness. The devotee spends all his days and moments wholeheartedly engaged in devotional service, but still he has to be content with material upheavals. So in the face of these inevitable changes, you should patiently endure your chanting Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? While we're waiting for questions, if there are any, would anyone like to say hello? How are you there in New Jersey?
There's no power, no heater.
Wow. No power, no heater, huh?
Yes, Maharaj.
Wow. And I heard it's hard to even drive places, huh?
Yes, Maharaj.
So what are you doing all day? Kirtan?
Yeah, we were doing Damodarskam and Kirtan with kids.
Wow.
But very cold.
Any major in... What's the
nobody
temperature?
Has I didn't temperature. Yeah, it's about 45-50.
Wow, huh? It feels like it usually is. I'm used to that because I lived in Vrindavan without heat.
Right.
Yeah, I said. But you have hot water.
Yes, my
you have hot water?
Yeah, hot
yes,
water is
no heat.
No heat, hot water.
We had no heat, no hot water.
Hot
it's
water is
really
good.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's, wow. Okay. I'm sure you have enough food, right?
Yes, Maharaj, food is there. Yeah.
The devotee always has the food. Okay. Okay, my regards to your family. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's TJ.
Hey, TJ. How are you guys up there?
No problems up here, Maharaj. Everything's fine up in Columbia County.
Oh, I hear your kids, huh?
Yeah, well, Rasa won't go to bed, so he's playing with Melinda right now. We were listening all together, having dinner, and missing you and just hanging out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I miss everyone there also. I regret everyone there. Well,
thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
I appreciate it a lot. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Gail, how are you doing?
I'm cold.
You also have no electricity, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I just finished cooking, so... That helped me a little bit.
Oh. Wow. I'm making jokes now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, now that you can't go to programs, you'll have to cook. Okay.
But your voice sounds like you're the one who is without the heat and the electricity. What happened? Are you sick?
You know, I'm out here in Govardhan, and I'm happily forming the austerities. I don't have hot water. Somehow my hot water never worked here in my place. But, I don't know. I don't really have a cold. Sometimes a little sore throat or something like that. Obviously, I'm a little bit hoarse. You know.
Yeah, you
but,
sound
pretty
hoarse.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think
I hope
it's
you
just
feel better than you sound.
I think I do. It's just a month of kind of... It's just just purification. You know, it's kind of very dry here. And, you know, yesterday I walked around Govardhan and maybe the dust or something. And, but I'm very happy here. I'm very happy here. Thank you. Okay. You had a question, Gail? Or just wanted to say hello?
Oh, I just wanted to say hello and say that I hope you feel better, but... Since you don't feel that bad, then I'll take it back.
I feel a little bad, but I'm not. It's not that. It's just a lot of little annoying things. That's all. I don't want to go into them, but there's a lot of annoying things. But I feel great, you know, because you live very simply here, and, you know, I like it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm not even wearing a shirt now, by the way. Maybe I should put a shirt on.
Uh-huh.
Just wearing my sannyas top, you know.
I'm happy that you're happy at home. I hope to one day feel happy at home like that, too.
This is the verse. It doesn't matter. Happiness, distress. Keep on with your urgency of your spiritual life. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else just say hello? Anybody else out there? A lot of times it's difficult to kind of, some of the phones don't work, people can't get on, and if there's many people on, they don't have to say hello, announce themselves either. That's not the program here. Okay, I'm going to continue my morning chanting. Then walk around Govardhan, at least part of it today. And then attend the Sangha with all the nice Vaishnavs here. Panchakalpa to Rubhya Sakha, to be able to put it in a problem, maybe it should be.